This is the third edition of our 2010 series, and today we launch a new irregular segment called Only Fools and Marketing Types, where we talk to people whose occupation or profession involves bravely attempting to analyse or forecast the future. And I can hear the emails of complaint winging their way to me. Now, our first guest, I should hasten to add, is neither a fool nor a marketer. She's Dr. Rebecca Huntley, and she's the research director for the social research firm Ipsos MacKay. Welcome back to the program.
It's lovely to be here.
And now, this is an opportune time to have you on because you've just released a new survey looking at how Australians feel about the future. So let's start there. It seems from what I've read that we're a pessimistic lot, aren't we?
Well, we're quite pessimistic about how our society's going to be in the future. We're feeling pretty confident about our own futures, and that's a bit of an interesting contradiction there. But there was no doubt when we sat down with Australians at the end of last year to ask them how they might feel our society might be in 5 to 10 years, it was almost universally pessimistic.
The survey was called The Future. What were some of the themes that you picked up? What were some of the themes that came through?
We're going to be a society with less in the future, less everything, less space to build houses, less water, less energy, and so forth. We're going to be a society with greater mental problems, a fatter society, a more insecure society, and a less civil society.
Now, this is what the respondents of the survey were telling
you. Yes. And, I mean, I've got to say, I think the end of the research period, our team sat down and we thought, oh, gosh, this is such terrible news. But I actually think that it wasn't so much a reflection of how people really think the future might be. It was more an amplification of current anxieties and, more importantly, a lack of confidence in leaders in our community, both in corporate Australia but also in public life, talking to us about how the future might be. So it's very much this sense of, well, the problems in society that we have now, we don't feel that anybody is addressing them correctly, therefore I only assume they're going to get worse in the future. At the end of a lot of the discussions that we had in the affinity groups we conducted, people often said, well, we adapted in the past, perhaps we'll adapt in the future, perhaps we'll find a way to control the forces that exist at the moment for good rather than bad. But there's very much this sense of, I'll be okay if I can create a kind of a barrier between me and the social forces out there, a kind of a cocooning process or a kind of bunker mentality that we saw amongst people.
Now, you're talking about society in the Australian context, in the Australian sense. Was there also a feeling of negativity about the future when it came to society overall, you know, in a general Western democratic sense?
Oh, yeah, there was a very much a fear that all of the things that they were concerned about were global forces that made their way into Australia as well, but that Australia was probably a little sheltered, that's likely to remain the lucky country for a little while, but it was very much that kind of focus on big international problems.
Now, despite the pessimism, as you say, personally, the people that you spoke to thought that they would be okay in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do we explain that? I mean, I know you said there's a sort of a bunkering off, if you like.
Yeah.
But that does seem quite contradictory, doesn't it? If we're all going to hell in a handbasket as a society, one would imagine that the individual is not going to be faring too well either.
No, that's right. And our team kind of summarised this mentality as, I'll be right, but yous are screwed.
Right.
And it didn't make much sense. And I think it only makes sense when you look at the pessimism really being about a fear of what's happening, an amplified fear of what's happening now, rather than rational concerns about the future.
Now, take us through the process involved in conducting research like this. I mean, give us some of the nuts and bolts.
Our research project's quite unique, actually, in the broad scheme of social and market research that's conducted in Australia. So the work that I do was started by Hugh MacKay over 30 years ago. I'm not a statistician, I'm not a numbers girl, I dropped maths at U10.
Nice.
But what we do is we bring together Australians, groups of Australians who know each other really well, so friendship groups. We have a company who we work with whose sole aim is to find these kinds of groups for us. And so it's normally about five or seven people, friends, and we go, one of our researchers, we have a team of researchers, goes to their home and we sit with them. And instead of asking them a whole range of very specific questions like, how do you feel about the future? Are you worried about climate change?
As in a traditional poll, I suppose.
Yeah, as in a very traditional, I suppose, focus group or a traditional poll, whether it be online or over the phone. We basically get a group who talk naturally all the time. We say, we're really interested in how you feel about the future, and we kind of leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And then they talk for around anywhere between an hour and 2 hours on that topic. And we do that for every report that we do, generally about 16 groups across 3 states, and we always make sure we have regional representation as well as urban representation. Instead of being representative, in terms of talking to lots and lots of people, we try and choose each group to be dramatically different than each other. So I might do 4 groups in Sydney, but it will be a whole lot of 60-year-old men in San Suzy, and then I'll go and talk to a whole lot of relatively wealthy 18-year-olds who are living in the inner city as parents.
And then do you look for the commonalities then, as well as the interesting differences?
Absolutely. And the thing that has always surprised me over, I've only been doing this for 3 years since you retired, is how much commonality there is. On a question like this, such as for the future report, the pessimism was the same across all groups. The issues they identified as being the ones that will be important in the future was pretty much the same across all groups. There are interesting angles and interesting different languages and ways that you go into those questions, but similar themes come up pretty much in every report that we do.
Now in a survey like this or in a research like this, how many people are involved?
16 groups of 7 per group, and then we sometimes augment that with paired interviews and stuff depending on the topic. So now, the sample isn't that big, but the time we spend with them is an extended period of time, so the data is very rich.
I have to say, to an outsider, I mean, most forecasting of this kind or even polling where you're talking about thousands of people, it can seem as though it relies really on a small number of people, you know, thousands out of a population of tens of millions, or in this case, not even thousands. Mm. How do you make sure that the samples that you get, the people that you get, are actually reflecting a genuine broader attitude?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And all research should be taken as indicative rather than as truth. Any organisation that subscribes to research subscribes to all different kinds of research conducted in all different kinds of ways with all different kinds of methodologies. So you'd be a bit insane just to base, any business decision or any government decision just on the research that we do. However, you would have a mix of different kinds of research, quantitative, qualitative, conducted online, conducted face-to-face. And then if there are some common themes or some common truths coming out, you'd feel pretty confident that you're going ahead or on the right basis.
You mentioned business and government there. Are they the main markets for this type of research, for this type of polling?
Generally, I mean, mainly with businesses, they're just looking at what are consumers want and what can we sell them in the future. They're very much looking at how people feel now and using it as a basis for trying to predict behaviour in the future. Government is always interested as well, again, for social change campaigns and all the rest of it. But some of our clients are NGOs, some of them are charities. Anybody that is really interested in trying to get a sense of how people are feeling and how they might act. You know, a lot of it I call is informed speculation, and people who are sophisticated research buyers and users know that that's what it is. Yeah.
Anyone who follows political polling knows that sometimes they prove wildly off the mark. When they get it wrong, though, it's obvious, isn't it? Because it's, you can see whether they predicted a certain party would win, the party doesn't win. And again, I guess in a sense they can correct then the sort of questions or the sort of research that they do. But with this type of social research that you do, how do you keep check on your accuracy over time?
I mean, I think the research that we do and spending really a lot of time listening to people rather than talking at them, which I think is significant, and doing that every 7 to 8 weeks, you get a cumulative picture of a kind of broad mind and mood, of Australians that can't really be quantified. So when you actually start to ask them questions and ask them hard questions about choosing one thing over the other, that's a certain way to get a sense of how people are. So we kind of have this more kind of cumulative, organic sense of how people are feeling.
Now, I imagine that determining which themes and trends to follow is as important as the actual conduct of the polling.
Absolutely.
Or the research. Mm. How do you actually determine those themes?
A combination of three things, and one is always indicated by the clients that we have, like what's on their radar, what are they really concerned about. A third strand is in listening to the people that are in the groups that we do. What are some of the things percolating underneath the surface, the small issues that constantly come up? And it's important to note everything that we do is non-directed, so they set the agenda. It's what they want to talk about rather than what we want to talk about.
I presume, though, you don't want to be reactive, do you? I mean, because
no.
You don't want to tell people what they already know.
Exactly. So there is a third element here, and that's the element of myself and the two other people in my team. What do we think, separate from what people are talking about now and separate from what our clients want, that we think needs to be explored? So there's a little bit of, again, informed gut instinct about what might be another issue that we might want to explore. And that just gets stronger and stronger the more you do research over years and years. And I don't think I'm there yet, but, you know, I can see it. I can see that germinating.
Dr. Rebecca Huntley, our first guest on Only Fools and Marketing Types, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.